You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the presentation.
As you can see by my incredibly trendy haircut, you've probably worked out that I've either done shave for a cure or I'm going through chemotherapy. It's the latter. So part of my story and what we're going to look at in the Bible today are really kind of meshed together. So my story with cancer started a bit over 2 years ago. In February 2016, I went in for surgery on a suspicious mass on one of my ovaries. And when I woke up from surgery, I was told it was ovarian cancer. It was a grade 3 cancer, and that means that it was aggressive. And it was a stage 3 cancer, which means that it had got out of the ovaries and into some nearby lymph nodes. Now, you might know a bit about ovarian cancer, and if you do, you'll know that this wasn't a great diagnosis. And probably even if you don't know that much about cancer, you can probably work out it wasn't a great diagnosis from what I've told you. The official statistics are that less than 40% of women with stage 3 ovarian cancer will live for more than 5 years post-diagnosis. To deal with the cancer, they had to take out both my ovaries, my uterus, and other bits and pieces, including the affected lymph nodes, just to make sure they'd mopped everything up. And so at 35 years of age, I was facing permanent infertility, menopause, chemotherapy, and a life-threatening cancer diagnosis. And I was so sad and so scared. I was sad because I had a life that I loved and I didn't want to leave. Like I said, I've got a husband and family and friends. I have a job I really enjoy and think is important. And we just bought our first house. And the thought of being torn away from all those good things and precious people was so hard. And I was scared. I was scared of suffering. I'm not a very brave person. And I was terrified about having to go through chemotherapy and how I would cope. I'd watched other people, family members, go through it, and I just thought, that is not for me. I can't do that. I was terrified about what life would be like if and when the cancer came back. And it hit me like a truck that I was actually terrified of dying. Scared of leaving everything familiar behind and walking through the dark door of death alone. And scared of being face to face with God and having to give an account to him of how I lived spent my life. I was a Christian, someone who was convinced about the historical person of Jesus, and I entrusted him with my life, but my first reaction was still fear. When I'd been well and healthy and life was enjoyable and full, if you'd asked me if I was scared of death or scared of meeting God, I think I would have said no, not in an arrogant way. I just didn't think I would be. When the event was a far-off hypothetical, I felt secure. But when it was suddenly thrust in my face as an inevitable reality, I found I was scared. And I thought I had all this stuff worked out, but cancer and the threat of death really blew the stuffing out of me, and it sent me back to the drawing board to see if what I'd put my trust in was trustworthy after all. Dealing with the cancer diagnosis and chemotherapy, I was plunged into a prolonged period of sadness and anxiety, and I was embarrassed about how fragile I was, how anxious, how whingy, how insecure. I'd had this notion of suffering with courage and with patience and a kind of glow of nobility about me. And instead, I was popping Ativan, and my courageous feat for the day was getting out of bed and having a shower. And as I struggled with how I could trust God in the midst of cancer, I went and I reread the Bible's biographies of Jesus' life. I felt like I needed to look at Jesus again to see what he was like and how he responded to people like me, people in disarray, people in pain. And so today I just want to share one story with you. This is from the biography of Jesus written by the first century Dr. Luke, and it records an incident where Jesus met someone with a desperate need. I'm going to read out, we're going to kind of read it in two halves. So we're going to start at the top where you see that little verse 17. One day Jesus was teaching, and Pharisees and teachers of the law, those are the religious leaders of the day, Pharisees and teachers of the law were sitting there. They had come from every village of Galilee and from Judea and Jerusalem, and the power of the Lord was with Jesus to heal the sick. Some men came carrying a paralyzed man on a mat and tried to take him into the house to lay him before Jesus. When they could not find a way to do this because of the crowd, they went up onto the roof and lowered him on his mat through the tiles into the middle of the crowd, right in front of Jesus. Here is a desperate person with a desperate life and death need. He's paralysed, and paralysis 2,000 years ago was one step away from a death sentence. And paralysis meant that you couldn't work, and there was no Centrelink, or disability pension, or Medicare, no NDIS. The only thing standing between you and starvation was the charity of others. And if you'd asked this man what he needed most in his life, the answer would have been obvious. He needed healing from his paralysis, which is humanly impossible. So he's a man without hope. But against all the odds, it looks like he might actually have a chance. His friends hear that this man Jesus is in town, and they've heard about the miracles he's been doing, healing literally hundreds of people. They find out which house he's teaching in, they pick up their friend on his mattress and they run there. But when they get there, they can't get in. No one will make room for them. It's this important religious leaders meeting, and who wants this guy interrupting? But his friends are desperate. They go onto the flat rooftop of the house and actually start dismantling the roof. They remove the tiles, make a hole in the ceiling, and in the middle of Jesus teaching all these important religious leaders, they lower their friend through the roof into the middle of the room, right in front of Jesus. Like, imagine if you had a board meeting and all of a sudden the tiles and there's guys on the table. It's like that, but massively multiplied. And everyone is just gobsmacked, waiting to see what Jesus will do. And so in verse 20, number 20, when Jesus saw their faith, he said, "Friend, your sins are forgiven." When Jesus saw their faith, he said, "Friend, your sins are forgiven." Now, that's not quite what we were expecting, is it? It's not quite what we were hoping for. We were hanging out for this guy to get healing. But at first glance, it looks like Jesus has misread the situation. Like, he's missed the glaring fact of this guy's paralysis altogether. We think, "Can't you see what he really needs? Legs! He needs to be able to move!" But Jesus isn't a dummy. He hasn't missed the fact that this guy's paralysed, and he isn't naive about what paralysis means for the reality of this guy's life. He's seen the desperate need, and in the face of the desperate need, he says, "There's something you need even more than healing." He's taken the full measure of the pain and fear of this man's life, and he's said, "There's something you need even more desperately than an end to paralysis. You need forgiveness. There's a rift between you and God that needs bridging. You're currently estranged from God because of your attitudes and your actions. You can't earn your way back, and you can't sweep it under the carpet. What you need is for God to forgive you." And if Jesus were to stand here today, face to face with you and me, he would say the same thing to us. He would look at our lives and see our desperate needs. He would see my cancer and my fear. He would see your pain and your struggles. And he wouldn't diminish them or ignore them. He's not pretending they don't matter. He would look them full in the face with compassion, but he would still insist that there is something we need even more desperately. We need God's forgiveness for shoving him out of our lives and blocking our ears to him. You see, we think our great need is to be freed from our current disabilities and suffering. And sometimes our suffering is overwhelming and almost unbearable. But actually, our greatest need is to have future suffering averted. Because there's a day coming when God will fairly judge the living and the dead. And the suffering on that day of those found guilty and unforgiven will be far worse than anything we've experienced in this life. When Jesus looks at our man and forgives his sins, he isn't giving him some kind of soft spiritual consolation prize. And he's not being callous about the man's current suffering. He's actually giving him the best news about suffering he could receive. That suffering now will have an end point, and that he doesn't need to fear eternal suffering under God's anger. But is it really so simple? that Jesus can just say, friend, your sins are forgiven. And on the day, it must have seemed to the man, surely it was too good to be true. How could he know for sure? The story continues. Some people were actually offended by Jesus saying this. So pick it up at verse 21, about halfway down the page. The Pharisees and teachers of the law began thinking to themselves, who is this fellow who speaks blasphemy? Who can forgive sins but God alone? Jesus knew what they were thinking and asked, why are you thinking these things in your hearts? Which is easier, to say your sins are forgiven or to say get up and walk? But I want you to know that the Son of Man, that's Jesus referring to himself, I want you to know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins. So he said to the paralyzed man, I tell you, get up, take your mat and go home. Immediately he stood up in front of them, took what he'd been lying on and went home praising God. Everyone was amazed and gave praise to God. They were filled with awe and said, we have seen remarkable things today. So the religious leaders are offended by Jesus telling this man he was forgiven. They ask, who except God can forgive sins? And they have a point. If Jesus is just an ordinary human like you and me, and he waltzes in saying he can forgive sin, he's worse than useless. He's offering something that he has no right to offer and no power to give. He's the most appalling con man, telling people that they no longer need to worry about their debt before God, but in reality able to do absolutely nothing about it. So the religious leaders ask a really important question, and Jesus is going to make sure that they get an answer. He wants everyone there that day to know that when he says to someone, friend, your sins are forgiven, they are absolutely forgiven. In front of everyone, he tells a man to get up, pick up his mat, go home. And straight away, the man gets up, picks up his mattress and goes home thanking God and telling other people his story. Just like that. No rehab, no gradual improvement, no assistance needed, just full and instant recovery of health and life. And the people watching on are trying to put the pieces together. They can work out the logic, but the conclusion seems outrageous. Jesus has the authority to heal a paralyzed person. They can see that with their own eyes. And he does that to prove that he has the authority to forgive sins. But only God has the authority to forgive sins. So that must mean Jesus is God. And if that is true, if Jesus is God, then it's so important that we listen to his diagnosis of our situation. By forgiving the man first and healing him second, Jesus is saying that our biggest need is forgiveness. I might think what I need most right now is healing from cancer, and there are some days where that need feels really strong. We might think that what we need most in life is comfort or success or acceptance or freedom from suffering. But Jesus comes along as a specialist doctor and he says, no, what you need most is to be forgiven. And I can give you what you need. And this is the good news, that there is a cure for our greatest need. My cancer is considered incurable. About a year ago, we got test results that showed that the cancer was back. Only a year after finishing chemotherapy the first time, so I'm now going through chemotherapy for the second time. And at that time, my doctor made sure that my husband and I were under no illusions, that we knew I was facing an illness that currently knows no cure and will eventually take my life. My specialists are really good at diagnosing me, but they are powerless to cure me. They can give me the diagnosis, but not the cure. Jesus is completely different. When he diagnoses, he also holds the cure. When he gives us the bad news, he also has the good news. When he shocks and confronts us by telling us that our problem with God is way bigger than we thought, he also comforts us by telling us that there's a solution if we're willing to go to him for forgiveness. But you shouldn't just take my word for it. You should check out Jesus for yourself. You should test what I'm saying and see if I'm representing Jesus accurately and truthfully. And the best way to do this, if you're someone who doesn't know Jesus or not sure what you think about him, the best way to do that is to actually read one of the Bible's biographies about Jesus for yourself. They were written by people who lived at the same time as Jesus and saw firsthand what he did. They're really easy to read and would only take you a couple of hours if you were to sit down and read through one completely, less than it would take you to read a novel. Usually it helps to read through it a little bit more slowly with a friend, because then you can ask questions and talk about what it means together. And if you'd be interested in looking at Jesus more closely, then there are three ways today that you can do that. And firstly, if you came with a friend today, they probably will ask you if you'd like to read about Jesus with them. Or if they don't ask you, you could say to them, hey, that's something I'd really like to do together. Now, secondly, you could write it on your feedback card. So you've got these little cards on your slip. These feedback cards are a great way of letting Gemma know how you found the morning, to ask any questions that you might have, or to tick that box, I'd like to find more about Jesus, and someone will get in contact with you and organise that. Or you could just grab Gemma yourself just while we're hanging around and talking and having morning tea. That would be a good next step. I'm around for the rest of the morning. I don't know when you have to run off to work, and I'm more than happy to talk. I'm happy to talk about the cancer and what that's been like. You can ask me any question you like. I'm happy to talk more about Jesus, anything. So don't be shy about coming over if you do want to talk about something. Thanks.